All right. If everyone has a sheet, we're going to talk today about Emes HaShekher. As I said, it's a halachic area which definitely has, there are real halachas involved, but there are also deep understandings of the nature of Emes from a Jewish perspective, the nature of Shalom from a Jewish perspective, etc. And there's, again, quite a lot of sources on the sheet. I'm going to go through them, some of them quite quickly. There are three basic major principles I want to bring out from today's class. And we'll see as we go through, I'll flag them up as we go through them, principle number one, number two, and number three. Let's have a look at the Torah source. Source number one actually is a red herring, as they say. It is not the Torah source for the prohibition on lying, but people might think it was. There's a pasuk in Vayikra that says, Lo siknoivu, do not steal, lo sechachashu, velo teshakru ish ba'amitoi, and do not deny a claim, velo teshakru, and do not lie each person against his fellow Jew, his fellow man, whatever that means. I'm not getting into that now. You would have thought this was the obligation not to lie. It says, Lo teshakru, you shall not lie. The truth is that the halacha understands this pasuk to be talking about a monetary court issues. Okay, don't lie in court and don't deny claims in court, etc. This is not used as the source of the prohibition on lying. What is used is number two, and the reason I brought number one is to show you that number two is not worded the same way. Number two is like this: Lo yisata mishpat evyon chaberivoy. Do not twist the judgment of a poor man in a case in judgment. Midvar sheker tirchak. Stay well away from sheker. V'naki v'tzadik al taharoig. Don't kill an innocent man. Ki lo yatzdik rosha, because I will not allow a rosha to succeed, to survive, etc., etc. V'shoichad lo yitikach. Do not take bribes. Ki ha-shoichad yaveh pikhim v'yisalef divrei tzadikim. Famous words, because bribery twists the eyes of the blinds the eyes of the intelligence and twists the words of the tzadikim, etc. Now, it seems at first sight that these pukim are also talking about courts. They're also talking about judges. Don't twist judgments and don't take bribes, etc. And we'll see soon that the Gemara understood these words, midvar sheker tirchak, in the second pasuk there, to be all-inclusive, not just in a courtroom scenario. And the first thing I want you to realize is that it doesn't say lo teshaker or lo teshakeru. It doesn't say thou shalt not lie. It says midvar sheker tirchak. Stay away from something which is sheker. The question is, why did it say it that way? The Torah is not frightened of saying don't or do. It doesn't say that. So on the one hand, you could understand that midvar sheker tirchak is more inclusive than do not lie. In other words, things where I would have said I'm not really lying, it's still no good because midvar sheker tirchak, you have to stay well away from a lie. On the other hand, you could read it the other way, which is, it doesn't actually say don't lie. Which is interesting, because it does seem that there are situations in which you might have thought it was wrong to say such a thing, but actually that's not called a lie. In other words, it builds in this level of, if you like, flexibility, midvar sheker tirchak, stay away from something which is sheker, which we'll see is very, very critical in understanding what is emes. There are many things that people might turn around and say they don't think is a lie, which is completely prohibited. And there are many things that people say, well, surely that's a lie. And the answer is, no, that's completely permitted. So we'll see how that works. The Gemara in number three is a Gemara in Shavuos. The Gemara goes through a number of scenarios where it's basically looking at the inclusive nature of the prohibition. In other words, saying, there are lots of things which I would have thought would be okay. What's wrong with this? The answer is, it's not okay. Midvar sheker tirchak. Things where no one's actually telling an outright lie, but they're still no good. Have a look at a couple of the examples. Number three, with the first box. Tan Rabbanu. Minayin l'dayin shelo yase sanigor ledvarav. How do you know that a judge is not allowed to justify his own judgment? In other words, a judge might sit there thinking, well, probably there's a way of looking like this. A judge has to be very careful not to start doing that. Why? Tamid lo midvar sheker tirchak. Because he's going to end up with sheker. Because this is something which you would have thought, well, that's a normal thought process of a judge to try and weigh up this way, weigh up that way. The Gemara is saying a judge has to be very careful not to allow his mind to go in a direction where he's actually beginning to convince himself of a certain argument. That's called sheker. Very subtle.
Like, you shouldn't, you know, like in American, like, I don't know, like Supreme Court, they always write, every judge writes up an explanation for his choice.
Right.
Is that something that this would be like, don't do that?
Well, no, it's good to write them. Absolutely, it's good to write an explanation. But the question is, have you come to a conclusion and then you're trying to justify your conclusion? Or are you really just looking at the facts in a very objective way and seeing what they actually point to? It's very easy to look to a situation, come to a conclusion, and then try and make the facts fit the conclusion. We all do that to some degree. The answer is that's not correct. The second example is very interesting. In 9, the Dain Shaloi Yeshu Talmid Bor Lefanov. How do we know that a judge is not allowed to have a nudnik sitting in front of him? A Talmid Bor, meaning that someone who's a bit of a nudge and a nudnik, who's going to start asking stupid questions all the time. We know people like that, right? In Shiurim. People asking off-the-topic, stupid questions. Talmud Laima Midvar Sheker Tirchak. That's also called Sheker. Why? No one's lying here, but it's getting off-topic, and it's going to lead into a direction which is just called Sheker. Very subtle areas. I want to skip to the last box, which is the one that's going to teach us what we need to know for this. So what's the scenario? The Gemara says, the rabbi turns around to the student and says, look, you trust me, right? I'm your rabbi. Always trust a rabbi. So he says, of course, rabbi, I trust you. You trust me for 100 mana? Let's call it $100. Trust me for $100? Of course I trust you for $100. So the rabbi then tells him this story. Mana yeshli etzel ploni. This guy down the road owes me $100. Okay? I only have one witness. And I've got a bit of a problem. The guy owes me $100. He's lying. He's cheating. He's not giving me the money. He owes me $100 and I can't prove it because I only have one witness. How do we know that the Talmud is not allowed to join in the case to help the rabbi get his money back? Talmud Loima, the Gemara says, Mitvah Sheket Tircha. Now, the Gemara doesn't like this answer. If I asked you before you came to this class, how do I know that you're not allowed to pretend to be a witness and stand up in court and say, yes, I saw him lend him money when you didn't really see anything? Where do we know that from? You need to come to Mitzvah Shechet Tirchak. That's one of the Ten Commandments, right? Don't be a false witness. So the Gemara says, what? You're telling me from Mitzvah Shechet Tirchak you're not allowed to lie in court? It's ridiculous. Ha Mitzvah Shechet Tirchak Nafka. The Gemara says, that can't be. Havana Shakurik Mashaka. That's complete out barefaced lying. Varachmana Amar and the Torah said Loisana Berecha Eit Sheker. Shaka, you're not allowed to be a liar in court. In other words, the Gemara is searching for the situation that you would have thought was not really a lie, but that's what Midvar Sheker Tircha is coming to include. Ella Kagoin, this is the case of the Gemara, Da Amalei, he says to him, Vadai Chatsada Isli. I've got one witness, don't worry about that. To Atha Kum Hasam, I just want you to come with me to court. The light tame of a loy midi, don't say a word. This is the case. The Rav wants to walk into court with the Talmud at his side, looking as though he's a witness. Walk into court with me. I have one witness on one side, you'll be on the other side, we'll walk confidently into court together. The guy will see me, he'll say, oi, the game's up. He found a second witness, I didn't realize he had another witness. He'll give in and he'll give me the money. But Chasa Chalila, I don't want you to say a word. Don't lie, don't say anything. Says the Gemara, Loi mifkas nepomashiko, you won't have to lie. Says the Gemara, filo hachi osa, that's what's osa. Mishum chenema midvar sheker tirchak. Because of midvar sheker tirchak. In other words, the Gemara is here defining, very interestingly, the parameters of emes and sheker for this mitzvah. Emes and sheker is not about what you say.
It's about what appears to be.
It's about what people understand. This guy's not saying a word. He's just walking into court, giving the impression that he's a witness. That's called sheker. Because the guy at the end of the day is misled. It's misleading. It's misleading. And he thinks that the guy's a witness and he's not a witness. What you get from this is principle number one. And here I'm going to flag this up. Principle number one. One of the basic understandings of emes and sheker in halacha is that it's not what you say that matters. Even if you say something that's technically 100% true, but it's misleading and you're getting something out of it, that's called sheker. Why do I say you're getting something out of it? Because we'll see. Sometimes there are things where you know it makes no difference to you one way or the other, and we'll have to see whether that's misleading. I'll give an example. You want to give, or shall I give an example? Yeah, I'll give an example. People are into all this kind of weasel words, white lies kind of thing. Let's say your mother calls to speak to you, and you don't want to speak to her. Okay? So, someone else, your husband picked up the phone, and he said, yeah? And you say, tell her I'm not here. Okay? You can't say that. It's a lie. Oh, well, you keep it up at aim. You speak to your mother. You know, whatever. Even if your mother's a nudge. Not lots of mothers like that. Okay, it's fact. So you say, you know something? You don't want to tell a lie because you're a very holy person. So you run out of the house and stand in the front yard and you look through the window and you say to your husband, now tell her I'm not in. Because now I'm not in. I'm out. The answer is, that's nonsense. That's nonsense. Everybody knows when you say she's not in, you say, of course she's not available, is a different answer, which could mean a million. That's not misleading anybody. It could mean a million different things. Right. But you can't say I'm not in because technically speaking, you're standing outside the house and now that means I'm not in. That doesn't work that way. It doesn't help. It's misleading. What she hears is not what is, doesn't matter what you say. But there was all this sort of clever ways of speaking in a way which is technically speaking true. That doesn't help. And even the Torah, the Gemara gives an example of someone who never even said a word. And he's lying, even though he didn't know
his mind. Tell the truth, but it appears like you're lying.
Like what?
It happened to me once. A man came to my parents' front door to ask for soccer. And my father was out. And they said, I'm sorry, my father's out. He could see through the slat of the window at the bottom floor that there was a Hoshab-looking man sitting in my father's study. And there was actually a
right.
Man staying with us. It was
right.
A brother from Eritrea. He was sitting in the study learning.
Right.
But he was not my father.
But you're not misleading.
And I didn't realize that you could see. And I said, my father's home. He goes, how can you say that to me? I can see your father's right there.
Okay, so that's not how you
say it. You tried to like...
No.
You know, he didn't let me explain. He said that to me and walked away and was like, so disgusted by my lie. And I was just like, I didn't hear this. I didn't see that.
I think there comes a point when, you know, he does have a mitzvah, Dan Kav Schus.
Right.
You know, if you're A, telling him something which is true, and B, you're not misleading him in any way. I mean, what you're saying is technically true and actually true.
It's actually true.
I don't see why...
I felt like, after that, I felt like, wow, I should have figured, I don't know.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's only because you're not getting anything out of it. It's not like he thinks something which is actually misleading him, and thereby you're just telling him the truth. He just doesn't believe you.
Right.
If he says to you, "Where do you live?" and you say, "Yeah, the Golders Green," and he says, "No, I know you live in Hendon," but you live in Golders Green. What I mean, what kind of sugar is there? Sugar is all over the world,
right.
And I'm not sure you're mechuyev to try and get out of there thinking. Well, yeah.
Like, in the case of this rabbi who, like, really is owed this money...
Yes.
Like, isn't it important... Like, what is the justice in that also?
We'll see. We'll deal with that point in a minute. There's a guy swindling my rabbi. Why should I not try and actually achieve justice? We'll see exactly the answer to that question. What comes out of this, actually, is the other direction as well. Even if you say something that's 100% false, completely not true, but everyone understands exactly what you mean... and there's no one being misled at all, then that's MS.
Like,
we do this all the time. People are sarcastic. Yeah. Okay? Everyone knows what you mean. Everyone knows how it works. You know, I walk out of the house with my wife, we're walking out towards the car, she says, did you lock the door? And I say, no. She knows what that means. Because if I had forgotten to lock the door, I would have immediately gone, oi! And I would have run back and locked the door. She knows if I say no, we get in the car, she knows I locked the door. What, I'm a liar? Now, I'm not saying it's a mitzvah to speak that way. I'm just saying some people's manner of speech is a way which is...
Okay.
Exaggeration. People exaggerate. Is that wrong? Are you lying?
I always want to know that. Is that lying?
So the Gemara actually deals with it. Have a look at the case in... I'm sure I brought you the source. Yeah, just look for a second over the page. We'll come back to the first page in a minute. Look at number seven. The Mishnah deals with what's something called Nidrei Havai. It's a mission in the Dorim. We take very seriously what a person says when they make a neder. You know, if they make a neder about something, the words they use are very critical, and they can't just, you know, approximate. That's not how Nidorim work. We take you at your word, literally. Says the Gemara, however, there is a category, something called Nidrei Havai, which are Nidorim which are really nonsense. Which we know what you mean, and we're not going to hold you to it. Gives an example. Amar, a person who says, Kainam, I swear, that if I didn't see as many people on the road as came out of Egypt. He said, how many people did you say? I make a neder that I saw on the road as many people as came out of Egypt. What? You mean you saw 603,550 people between the ages of 20 and 60? Is that what you saw? And if there are 602,596 people, you're a liar? You know what I mean? Don't drive me crazy. I mean there was a load of people there. I don't mean there were 603,550. Okay? Or im loira isi nachash kokoras beit avad. How big was the snake? Oh, it was as thick as a plank of wood. What, that thick? What if it was that thick? You're a liar? You know what I mean? You know, every fisherman catches a fish about this big. In other words, people speak in a, and again, it's not telling you that it's good to speak that way, but it's telling you no one can call you a liar if you say, I told you thousands of times to please be home on time. And you only told me 903 times. So you're a liar, it's a deraita. That's not how it works. This is examples of people who say things which are false, but everyone understands.
Those people who, you know, you ask them what time is 1:06:17, you don't actually know it's 6:28. They just have a very MS6 mind. They're just saying it.
No, I don't have an MS6 mind. I think they're just annoying.
Some people are really like.
No, if somebody says, if somebody wants to correct you when you say it's 6:30, someone asks you the time, you say it's actually 6:28. What are they achieving? That MS6?
I don't think it's like
it's not nice. Some people who actually do that.
No, because they question what time is it. It's different if you ask it in someone in the kitchen in the evening. It's different than if you ask it in a NASA space program. If you're in the middle of the NASA space program and you ask what time it is, you need it to the nearest microsecond, because otherwise the space shuttle would crash. And then if you say it's 6:30, that's not good. But everyone knows what you mean. Let's get real here. The Gemara is trying to get to a reality here. It's not a technicality. If it's misleading and technically true, that's sheker. If it's not misleading but it's technically false, that's MS. If I say to you, do you have a pen?
Right.
Then you know I mean, can I borrow your pen?
Right.
I'm not taking a survey for Reader's Digest.
Right.
Do you have a pen? Does she have a pen? Does he have a pen?
I say no, even though I'm holding a pen in my hand, I say no.
Well, okay, so then already you're going to have to explain to me why you're holding a pen. But let's say you have a pen, but you don't want to lend it out. It's your best pen. You don't like any of the people. You're entitled not to lend it out. You can say, no, I'm sorry. Does that mean you're lying to me? No, because I'm not interested whether you own a pen. I'm interested whether I can borrow your pen. This is poshut, but it's on a wedding invitation. You put the chuppahs at 7:00. Now, you have to know your customers. If you know in Israel, that means that you're really doing the chuppah at 8:00, and everybody else knows that, and you know that, and they know that, then that's fine. You write 7:00 and you start at 8:00. And if you write 7:00 and you start at 7:00, so that's sheker. Because the people read 7:00 and they translated that as 8:00. Again, is that the right way to be? Maybe not. But if everyone understands what you mean, then there's no problem there. You have to know your people. And therefore, you know, this is the first very critical principle in MS and sheker. It's very posh, it makes a lot of common sense, but it comes out of that Gemara very clearly that if you're misleading, then it's a sheker. Now, you should be asking yourselves a question, you probably already did, maybe you didn't, but the obvious question is on last week's parasha with Yaakov Avinu, when he says to Yitzchak, you know, he says, Miatabani, who are you? Who are you? And he says, Anochi, Esav Bechorecha. I am Esav, your firstborn.
They have Anochi, and then Esav is your brother.
Right. Yeah. So you know now. What's that? Totally misleading. How in what way does that help in any sense to excuse what you did? Because if you say in a clever way, Anochi, Esav Bechorecha. Did Yitzchak understand from that? Oh, I see you're Yaakov. That's fine. You know, he understood. Unless you want to understand the parsha that he knew who he was all along, and there is a mahalach like that. Fine, that's different. But it doesn't help that he said it in a clever way. It almost makes it worse. We're going to see soon what pshat in that Rashi is, which is quite different from what most people learn. And the truth is, you know, even if you did learn Rashi like that, is that how you're going to speak when people ask you a question? You know.
It's in here. The bride question. I mean, that's
the next source. Number 8. Okay, let's go. Okay, so principle number 1 is that what you say, it's what you say that, it's what they hear that matters, not what you say. And that's principle number 1. Number 8. Tana Rabbana. This is principle number 2. Ketzer Maragdim Nifnei Akala. We saw a little bit when we did Hachnasas Kala. What is the way you praise the bride? They're not talking about dancing. They're talking about how do you praise the bride when you're faced with a conflict between MS, the chassan says to you, don't you think my bride is the most beautiful woman in the world? And, you know, she reminds you of the Hunchback of Notre Dame. You know, what are you going to say? Says the Gemara, Beishamai Omrim Kala Kamoshihi. The Beishamai says you have to say it how it is. We saw this source already. You have to find something to praise that's true. You cannot say something which is false. No, you say that she's a beautiful bride. Doesn't matter what she looks like. The correct answer is she's a beautiful bride. She's na'eh, she's nice, chasuda, she's. Amru lahen, Beishamai lebeit Hillel. Beishamai said to Beit Hillel, Hare shehaisa chigeres oy suma, and if she was a hunchback, or she was blind, you know, whatever, she's not objectively the most beautiful woman. Amru la, you say to her, Karna lechasuda, we're ridiculous. Says, Beishamai ba'atoira midvasheke tirchak, it says midvasheke tirchak, don't tell a lie. So you see from this two very interesting things. Number one, Beishamai understood this halacha in a more objective way. Okay, in a more technical way. Number two, you see, it's obviously not in a courtroom. Midvar Sheker Tirchak is obviously a halacha that applies across the board. So what was Beit Hillel's answer? You remember from when we did it last time? Beit Hillel answered him, or answered them, Amru lahem Beit Hillel Beit Shammai l'divrechem, and according to you, Mishalakach mekach romin ashuk, is someone buy something from the marketplace, right? A dress, whatever, from a shop. You praise it or you criticize it. You know, it's too late now. They've done it. They've done the deal. And they ask you, what do you think of this? They're not asking you for a technically true answer. They're asking you to make them feel better. And Beit Hillel basically says, very clearly, when somebody needs to be made to feel better, then MS is not the issue here. The issue is Shalom. The issue is Shalom. And MS has to take a back seat here. Because the mitzvah of Midvash HaKetirchak is not something which technically overrides the obligation to bring Shalom to the world. On the contrary, Shalom is MS. And Machloikes is Sheker on a certain level. And therefore, one overrides the other. We'll see explicitly number 9. The Ritva says, Peirush, the Ritva explains on this particular Gemara, the Kol Shehu Mipnei Darchei Shalom, whenever you have a case of Darchei Shalom, Ein Boy, there is no longer Mishum Midvashek Tichak. There is no longer a mitzvah of Mitzvah Shek Tichak. If the MS will lead you to Machloikas, that's not called MS anymore. And we learn this from various different sources. We see the Gemara brings 3 limudim in Yevamos as to how we know that you're allowed to lie in order to bring Shalom to the world and to other people. Number 10. The Amar Rabbi Loi, Mishum Rabbi Elozer, Reb Shimon, Mutzah Loi La'adam L'shamas Medavah HaShalom. You're allowed to L'shamas, means to change the truth. You're allowed to change the truth when it comes to Shalom. Shenema, first proof. Avichav Tiv'a, your father commanded. Koitoim Ruli Yosef, this is what you have to say to Yosef. Anasana, etc., etc. Now, what's going on here? The brothers are turning around to Yosef after Yaakov dies and saying to him, they're frightened he's going to take revenge. Now that Yaakov's dead, he's going to basically clap them in irons and throw them in prison. They say to him, they make up this whole story that, you know, before our father died, he told us to tell you not to be hard on us, to forgive us. It's all not true. Yaakov, as far as we're aware, didn't ever know what was going on. Or did he? That's the question. When you learn Parashas Vayechi and you see the allusions that Yaakov is making in the brochas to Levi and Shimon and things like that, is he hinting to them that I know what went on, or is he not? The Rashi and the Ramban learn different ways. The fact of the matter is, we never see that he said anything like this to the brothers. They're making it up. Why are they making it up? Because they're worried about, you know, Machlokas. It's not that they're trying to mislead Yosef. He knows what they did. They know what they did. Everybody knows what everybody did. They're just saying to him, we don't want there to be a machlokas here. And therefore, the Gemara brings this as a proof that you're allowed to say things in order to bring shalom, to prevent the family from falling apart.
Is that avoiding machlokas or avoiding themselves getting thrown in jail?
Well, no, because again...
does that also work? If you want to protect yourself even more?
Depending on what you're doing. Are you trying to protect yourself by pretending that you didn't do something that you did do? In other words, if someone says, if you're a teenager and your, you know, mum says your curfew is 1 a.m. and you crawl in at 4 a.m. and the next morning they say, what time did you come in last night? So we're going to say, well, you know, the Shalom Bayis, Mutzah, Shalom Smith, Shalom, I don't want to cause machloikas, you know. The answer is, the only reason you're lying there is to get yourself out of a scrape. The brothers are not trying to get themselves out of a scrape. Yosef knows what they did. They know what they did. If he takes revenge on them,
they don't want to get in trouble. But they think that Yaakov said this.
But they don't deserve to get in trouble. If he does take revenge on them, that would be a massive avera on his part. It would be in a comma. They did tshuva. They said sorry. In other words, they're not trying to avoid something they deserve. They're trying to avoid something they don't deserve, which is somewhat different than you lying about what time you got in the morning. That's the first source it brings. The next one it brings in the middle of the second line, number 10, Reb Nosson, I'm a mitzvah. It's actually a mitzvah to lie in order to bring shalom. Not just it's allowed, it's a mitzvah. And he brings an interesting example. Shenemar, for Yom Shmuel. Shmuel says to God, Eich Eilech, how can I go? With Shama Shaul the Hargini. Shaul HaMelech will hear about it and he will kill me. What's he talking about? He was sent to anoint David HaMelech and to make him the new king. And he said to God, that's not so straightforward. Like, you want me to just breeze into Bethlehem, find a guy, anoint him and say, you're the new king of Israel. Well, what do you think the old king of Israel will have to say about that? Like, this is not the kind of thing you can do. It's called treason. He'll hear about it. He'll kill me. You don't walk around doing that. So what does God say to him? He goes, okay, you're right. Make up a whole miser. You're going to Bethlehem for a family simcha. And he tells him this whole thing to say. HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands him to lie. Again, not because Shmuel is trying to get out of something he deserves. He doesn't deserve to be killed. He's doing the Dvar Hashem. But because he's trying to avoid a machloikas, the last thing we want is Shaul HaMelech killing Shmuel HaNavi. That's not going to help anything or anybody. And therefore, God tells him to actually lie for his purpose. And the climax of this source is Debei Rabbi Yishmael Tana, Godel HaShalom, how great is Shalom She'afa Kodesh Baruch Hu Shinavo. Now, it is a Kodesh Baruch Hu tell other people, it's a mitzvah sometimes to lie, but Hashem lies. Dimi Ikarik, because originally it said, Adoni Zaken, my husband is so old. With the Soviet Ksiv, but Aniva Kanti, and I'm so old. What's this talking about? Very famous. Sarah and Avram. Sarah says to God, she laughs, and she says, oh, how can I ever have a baby? I'm such an old woman, my husband's such an old guy. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu only repeats the first half of the phrase to Avram. Which, by the way, you see from this, that just missing out half the information is itself a lie. Because the heter, as it were, was Shalom Bayis. Which you see, you don't need a heter if it's not a lie. So even though Sarah said two things and Hashem repeated one, the answer was for Shalom. And by the way, it's very interesting. You see how sensitive Shalom is. You're like, Avraham Avinu is going to get offended.
He's 100 years old.
He's 100 years old. Like, you know, how long? 99 to be precise. How? I mean, he thinks he's a young guy. And also, he's so fragile. His ego is so fragile that he's going to get offended that his wife thinks he's an old guy. And nevertheless, you don't mess around with Shalom Bayis. You never know. You never know what people feel and what people have for ribbles, as they say. You know, we're not thinking that Avraham Avinu would, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu nevertheless teaches, or at least the Pshat, the Psukim, is teaching that lesson. Very, very critical. And we see, therefore, that Shalom is an overriding factor. Of course, one of the tests of Shalom is that you're not getting anything out of it. Shalom Bayis means you're bringing Shalom between other people. Classic case of Aaron, you know, the Medrash. He's running to this one, he's running to that one, trying to make them. He's not getting anything out of this. All these lies that he's weaving are just to help other people. He's not doing anything for himself. Once you realize you're beginning to get something out of it yourself, then you know, you can't say, well, I need to cheat on this test because I need to get a degree, because I need a job, otherwise I'll have no Shalom Bayis. You know, That doesn't work. Cheating on a test is clearly sheker. It's also Gnevas Das, which is another prohibition, which is separate. The Gemara interestingly learns that in certain areas, even when it's not quite exactly Shalom, but there may be other overriding reasons, that sheker and emes is a little bit of a variable thing. Have a look at number 12. The Hani Tlas Mili Avidi Rabbonon de Meshana B'Milayhu. People who represent Torah, who live Torah values. It says rabbis, it doesn't have to mean necessarily just rabbis, but they're people who are sensitive and want to lead a Torah true life. They have to lie about certain things. But Mesechet, what does Mesechet mean? How much you've learned? In other words, someone goes up to a rabbi and says, you know, is it true that you finished Shas when you were 70 years old? And it is true. The rabbi doesn't have to say, oh yes, it's true, yes. He doesn't have to say that. He can say, no, you don't believe everything you hear. And because that there's a merit in the rab not being honest about how much he knows in order to breed some kind of a nava.
Increase people wanting to learn more?
So you have to weigh up the circumstances. Why do they want to know? Obviously, if they ask you a shaila, do you know the answer? And you say, well, no, not really. I mean, that's not very helpful. They want to know the answer. They're asking you the answer. And similarly, if you're going to be an inspiration to other people, it's not called showing off. Okay, but this is a scenario in which it's like people are praising you and people are, you know, going and talking nice things about you. You don't need it, okay? Your ego doesn't need it, and therefore he's allowed to kind of play that down. But Puria is very interesting. What's Puria? Puria two pshatim on, more at least two pshatim abroad. One is Pru Revu, in other words, Inyane Tznias. Sometimes people ask you things and it's like, you know, too much information. You don't need to know that. I'm allowed to.
Sorry, you asked if you're on birth control.
Yeah. And that happens. Usually with family. You know, family, sisters, mothers.
Doesn't matter what the truth is, you're allowed to tell them whatever you want to tell them.
And they call it Mikmanite, like all those kind of things.
All these kind of things. Other people have no right to any of this information. Again, if you're dealing with someone who does have a right to this information, your wife, your husband, you know, husbands and wife need to know if they're on birth control. That's like very, it's very ikroni to the family unit. On the other hand, your sister-in-law doesn't need to know this. You know? Are you pregnant? You need to know this information. You'll find out soon enough. And if, you know, I'll tell you when I need to tell you. That's one pshat. Another pshat, Puria, they bring is Purim. Talmidei Chachamim are not meant to get drunk on Purim. They're meant to look as if they're drunk on Purim. Maybe a subtle difference. But not everyone takes that quite as... anyway. Well, Shpiza is very interesting. Rashi brings down the Shpiza. What does Shpiza mean? It means hospitality. So Rashi says, Okay? Sha'aluhu, if they ask you, aloshpizu, on certain people's hospitality, in kiblu, say, pardon me, office, if they greet people nicely, va'omer lav, and you say, no, midatovahi, that could also be good. What's the case? Someone goes to you and say, you know, I hear the Hamiltons is unbelievable. Like, they've got their hospitality, there's like, you know, people and dancing and singing, and like, no yeshiva guy and STEM girl should ever go through a year without going to the Hamiltons for dinner. You don't have to say, even if that's true, you don't have to say, yeah, of course, no. Kadesh lo yikbatsu boy b'nei adam, because otherwise people will drive them crazy. There's enough people already calling them, driving them crazy. This is exactly a classic example.
Yeah.
Like people, whenever you hear their name, all you hear is, oh, you know, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable. And the truth is, it is unbelievable. But you're not helping them by spreading the word. They don't need you to spread the word. Okay? They want people to drive me crazy. They'll eat up all their money. But the word, the Gemara is very sensitive. You have to be, not everything needs a technically true answer if you're going to cause people harm by that. It's very difficult. What the Gemara seems to be telling you is that MS is a very sort of difficult thing to quite put your finger on. There are situations, shalom, there are situations, there are sneers, there are situations of people's money being eaten away, etc., etc. You have to be very sensitive to, and this is all coming from the Pasuk, Nivar Sheketircha. It doesn't say do not lie. It says stay away from anything which is sheker. What is sheker? That's the question. So that's principle number two. There are overriding factors like shalom, like sneers, like you know, people's sanity, which sometimes override shalom. As long as you're not getting anything out of it, you're not misleading anybody. Now, the third principle, which is perhaps the most interesting, is the first principle is not what you say. It's what they hear.
Right.
Therefore, something which is technically true but misleading is a lie. Something which is technically false but not misleading is the truth.
Right.
The second principle is that there are other factors which override Midvar Sheker Tirchak, or which are built into Midvar Sheker Tirchak. Shalom. Sneers.
Right.
By the way, answer your question. Oh, we haven't got there yet. We'll get there in a minute. Number 14. The third principle, which is the, in many ways, I say the most interesting, is the following. Yaakov lies. He says, I'm Esav. I brought you the Pasuk in 14. Vayavo el Aviv, vayome Aviv, vayome hineni mi atabini, hu vayome Esav, vayome Yaakov el Aviv, anuchi Esav b'chorecha, b'dada asisi. It seems to be very, very, very explicit as a lie, etc. Go over the page to number 3. I brought you the Rashi that we referred to before. It says, Rashi, anuchi Esav b'chorecha, anuchi ha-mevi lecha, I'm the one who's bringing you, comma, v'esav hu m'chorecha, and Esav is your firstborn. In other words, he puts a pause. If you look at the Maharal, you'll see that that's why he uses the word anochi, because anochi allows for that grammatical pause, whereas ani doesn't. And they make up a whole thing like that. Question is, how does that work? Why is that not disturbing, and how do we answer that? Now, by the way, you should know there are different mahalchim in how Yaakov was able to say what he said. Are we going to follow one particular mahalach, which is the Radak, which fits into this whole Emes Sheker discussion? There are others. For example, I would, if you're interested in this issue, I would refer you to the Netziv. The Netziv has nothing to do with this particular topic, but the Netziv debates this issue, and it, in the Hemik Davar, and in his small print in the Herchav Davar on the bottom, he says that this is an interesting example of an Aveira L'Shem Shamayim. In other words, don't try to justify how what Yaakov did wasn't an Aveira. It was an Aveira. But it was an Aveira that needed to be done. And he gets into the whole sugya as to when do we see that there are cases where an Aveira is the right thing to do. It's a very tricky sugya. And it brings in the whole issue of Yael, Tamar, Yael, all of Esther, Nachashveirosh, and all that kind of stuff. It's a very complex sugya, and that's probably why they don't teach it in high school.
We can judge for ourselves now.
No, probably not. You're right. Although it's in coming to an understanding of how certain issues in Tanakh work, it's very critical, because it is a sugya the Gemara deals with. Yael is the classic example where she is married to somebody else, and yet she seduces Sisera. How could she be able to do that? And the Gemara discusses that in great detail. But that's a different mahalach, which I'm not going to get into. What's that? At the end, she chops his head off, but only after she's seduced him. Yes. That seems to be the, well, that's what we're talking about with Esther, as how it may be true of Yael as well. I'm not sure. I never saw that inside. But even if that's true, that doesn't give you a heifer to commit adultery. the fact that I'll commit adultery and I'll accept the consequences that I'm never going to go back to my husband afterwards. That, I mean, you know, maybe that is a consequence of this. Oh, so the Gemara then raises that issue and says one of the classic qualifications or tana'im, one of the conditions of an aveira l'shem shamayim, is that you're not getting anything out of it yourself. And therefore the Gemara discusses how Yael could do this with Sisera, etc., etc. The Netziv brings this, and I can't resist it because it's a very interesting idea. The Netziv brings this with Yaakov. It says, did Yaakov get anything out of this?
Sure, then he got more.
Oh.
So, but it wasn't him, but it wasn't him, it wasn't him.
So if you look in this week's parsha, next week's parsha, when Yaakov's getting all this money and all these animals and all this brocha, in next week's parsha, when Esav comes up to him and says, what's all this? Yaakov is very quick to say, you take it. Kach es birchasi. He even said, take my brocha away. Take it. He's very, very unhappy about getting anything out of it. And he's very uncomfortable with the entire thing. This whole wrestling match with Esav is him, you know, wrestling in many ways with which side of him is which, and is he Esav, is he Yaakov, who is he, and how does he come to terms with that? If you look in the Mefarshim there in Parshas Vayishlach, you'll see there's a beautiful medrash which says that because Yaakov made Esav scream in this week's parsha, just gone, he screams, yeah. So because of that, we ended up having the whole Purim tension when Esav's descendant Haman put us under threat of annihilation, and we screamed and cried for 3 days. So the Netziv asks, he says, well, why should we suffer? If Yaakov did an Aveira L'Shem Shamayim, why was he punished for it? Why were we punished because of what he did? And he says, no, because I told you. The one condition of an Aveira L'Shem Shamayim is that you can't get anything out of it. That moment when Esav was screaming, and Yaakov was listening behind the wall thinking, yeah, you see, in the end, all that trickery for these years, and you see in the end, I ended up with a bracha. So it's unacceptable. That little shiver of pleasure was enough to make Purim happen. And all the negative. It's very interesting. But it's it. Look it up then and see how that works. Okay, have a look. Now, we're going to follow a different mahalak. We're not talking about that approach. We're going to talk about the following. Look at number 16. Interesting Gemara. Hahu Aramot. There was this non-Jewish man. To have a salik va'achil psach in Yerushalayim, he would go and eat from the Korban Pesach in Yerushalayim. Now we know that non-Jewish people are not allowed to eat from the Korban Pesach. He just dressed up as a Jew. He used to go every year. That was how he got his particular, you know, excitement on Pesach time. He'd go and eat from the Korban Pesach. Amar, and he's boasting about this to his rabbi back home, also the local rabbi. Ksiv kol benecha lo yoichel ba kol ara lo yoichel ba. It says no one's allowed to eat it unless they're Jewish, unless they've had bris mila. Va'ana and I ha'kachil v'shufri shufri. I eat from the best of the best. I eat every year. What are you going to do to stop me? He says to the rabbi. Amalei Rabbi Yehuda ben Baseya. Rabbi Yehuda ben Baseya says to him, Mikasafu leima aliyah. Did you ever ask for the aliyah, the most choice part of the animal? Now you know and I know that the aliyah is treif. It's the bit that gets offered upon the mizbeach. So he's going to look like a bit of a fool walking into the Beis HaMikdash asking for that part of the animal. It's like walking into, you know, kosher restaurant asking for shrimps. So he doesn't know this, of course. So he says to him, Amalei lo, he says to him, no one ever told me to do that. He says, now listen, I'll give you a piece of good advice, says Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseya. Kisakas lahasam, when you go there next time, Emelu, why don't you say to them, Safali mi aliyah, give me from the aliyah. So what happens? He did. Kisalik, when he went there, Amalei lo, he said to them, Me'ayin safuli, give me from the aliyah. Amalei, they said to him, Aliyah? The Aliyah goes on the Mizbeach. What are you talking about? Amrulay, they said to him, Man Amalachahachi, who told you to ask for the Aliyah? Amalu, he said to him, said to them, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseya, my rabbi, because he's dressed up as a Jew. The Gemara says now, Amru, they said, the people are working in the Beis HaMikdash, my high, what do we have here? Kedu Kaman, what do we have in front of us? Badku Basrei, they checked into him. Ashku Daramas, they found he was a non-Jew and he was a liar and he was a fraud and he was a swindler. Katluhu, they killed him. Whether they were right to kill him or wrong to kill him is a different question, but they killed him anyway. Shalchu Leila Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseya, they sent a message to Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseya. Shalom Lecha Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseya, peace to you. Da'at ben Netzivim, you're all the way up in Netzivim, umutsudatcha, and your nets prusav Yerushalayim, spread even to Yerushalayim. In other words, Shkoyach Gadol. You got the guy found out. You found that you had the guy, you know, reveal himself. What's going on? Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseya says to this non-Jewish guy, Why don't you ask for something? Knowing that he's lying to him, that he's going to ask for it, he's going to get, you know, into trouble. How could he give him such advice? How could he lie to him like that? What's more, the Gemara gives very other examples. Number 17. You're allowed to make a neder to people who are coming to kill you, or coming to take your money away. Shehi truma, that the food you're carrying is truma. Afa bishayin truma, even if it's not truma. Shehi shal beis ha-melech, that it belongs to the king. Afa bishayin shal beis ha-melech. You're allowed to lie barefaced to people, you know, they're coming to take your food away. No, it's not mine, or it's not, it's truma, you can't eat it, etc., etc., etc. You're allowed to lie.
Someone's
going
to kill you or
going to
steal from you?
Both. He gives an example. He's going to steal your money, they're going to kill you, all sorts of things. Now you go to sentence, well, they're going to kill me, they're not. Fine, are you allowed to do anything if they're going to kill me? Even if they're going to steal your money, they're going to take your money away. Says the Gemara, it's poshet. You're allowed, of course, to make nadarim that are not true, and that's not a problem at all. Now, the Gemara debates exactly what you have to say, whether you have to say it in a clever way, etc., etc. But the principle is you're allowed to basically tell them something. And the most extreme case is number 19. This is interesting halacha. What happens in the following cases? The Gemara in Bava Metzia, hasocha es ha'umnin. You hire someone to do work for you. Let's give an example. You hire someone to decorate your house, and you do paint the house. You do a deal with them. You say, I need it decorated. My mother-in-law is coming for Shabbos. Yeah, you have to look nice. You need to finish by Wednesday evening. No problem. You agree a price with them, $1,000, whatever it is. Wednesday night, everyone's happy. What happens? He doesn't turn up. You call him up, and he says to you, oh, I'm sorry, I'm busy on another job at the other side of town. This has happened to me in the past. I'm busy on another job. I'm sorry, I'll come to you next week. And he says to him, I'm sorry, next week's no good. My mother-in-law's coming this week, not next week. You have to come this week. Well, I'm very sorry, I'm too busy. What happened is he got a better offer and he just threw you over. That happens. So the Gemara says, what can you do? What are your halachic options? Kol davar she'avad, any time that you've lost out, because they've gone back on their contracts. So obviously your best option is to try and just hire someone else. Okay, fine. So let's say you can't find someone else for the same price. Mokum she'ein sham adam, where there's nobody else that you can just replace them with. Socher aleihem, you can either hire against them, meaning, let's say that the only people you can get now are the emergency decorators, and they're going to cost five times the price. So you get them, and then you sue him, and you take him to Beis Din, and you say, you cost me this money, you should have come on Tuesday, and you didn't come. Then now I have to pay $5,000, you owe me the rest. So you can have a whole court case. Or, what if there are no emergency decorators? What if he's the only guy in town? Says the Gemara, it's Mishnah, it's Mita. You can trick him. Trick him? So the Gemara says number 20, Ketzed Mita, how do you trick him? Omelein, you say to the guys, we agreed $1,000. Bootlushtein, take $2,000. If you can finish it this week, take $2,000. And he says, well, okay, for $2,000, I'll tell the other guys at the other side of town that I'm not going to finish them, and I'll come and finish you. Okay, and I'll lie to them. And then when he finishes the job, he says, where's my $2,000? And you pay him $1,000. And he says, well, you promised me $2,000. And you say, well, you promised me you'd finish by Wednesday. No? Sounds so mean, right? So, you know, obviously if there's an element of Chil Hashem and things like that, that's a slightly different kind of cheshbon. But you can imagine this, you know, you get in a cab and the guy says, how much is it going to be? 50 shekels. And you're sitting in traffic. And he says to you, actually, you know, now it's going to be 200 shekels. But we agreed 50 shekels. Yeah, but I've changed my, you know, the traffic now. So what are you going to do? So you could say, well, I'm not going to pay you. So say, well, I'll let you out. So you're in the middle of East Jerusalem, you know, in 2 o'clock in the morning. I'll let you out here. You can walk. So you say, according to this, you'll say, fine, 200 shekels, whatever. And at the end, even 50 shekels. Now, of course, he'll probably take out a gun and shoot you. No, I'm not recommending it on a kind of pekuach nefesh level. But in principle, why should you be allowed to act like this? You know, MS, tzedek, mishpat, you know, why should this be even on the cards? And the last case I brought you, number 21, is a very interesting case. Give me my pacifier back. Okay, number 21. Look at this case. This, you'll probably find this interesting. This is a case of yibum. How does yibum work? So a woman's married to a man. Fortunately, the man dies. They have no children. Okay, she has no children.
Do they still do an
Adam? No, you know, we don't do yibum these days. We only do chalitza these days. There are certain opinions in the Sephardi community that yibum is still allowed. But the reason we don't do yibum these days is because we're worried if people marry their brothers-in-law, they're not necessarily always doing it l'shem shamayim. And if you're not doing it l'shem shamayim, that's a big problem because brothers-in-law are riots. Yibum is a very strange mitzvah. It turns something which is chayv kores, a chayv misa, overnight into a mitzvah d'oraisa.
You're not allowed to like the guy that you marry also?
It's not a question of you're not allowed to like him. Of course you're allowed to like him. Lehefech, if you don't like him, how are you going to marry him? But the question is whether there's like him and there's like him. It's a good question. Well, they basically closed down the Yibum options even a long time ago. In the Gemara already, there's a debate whether you're allowed to do Yibum these days. And in those days...
It's not hardly enough to be able to battle.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah, exactly. You know, people may be... stranger things have happened. Okay.
Terrible.
Who would ever kill somebody just to be able to get to their eyes? You open up the parasha of Dovin Betsheva and you can read it and learn it there and see how that works. Who did what and how did he do it and who was guilty and who was not guilty? Complicated sugya, not so straightforward. Look at the example number 21. Bat Chamua de Rav Popa. The Rav Popa had a female relative, Nafla Lifnei Yovam, and she ended up to do Yibum with somebody, okay? She'ein Hagun Lo. And he was not suitable for her. I mean, let's say the guy's, you know, covered in warts and he's repulsive. So she turns around and says, I don't want to marry this guy. How can I marry this guy? He's 68 years old. He's, you know, he's cruel. It's awful. The answer is, well, of course, you have to do chalitza. He can't marry a woman. Even though, technically speaking, they are connected. So he has to do chalitza. After the Kamed Amaya, they came to Abaya. Amaleh, he said to him, chalotzla. You know, do chalitza with her, do the decent thing. And of course, he turns around and said, no, she's my wife, I'm going to marry her, it's my right, I don't care what you say, you can't stop me. So Abaya says, you know what? Chalutz la'al menashe titin l'cha, masayimzus. What if she pays you $20,000? You'll divorce her now? Oh, yeah, that's fine. That's fine. No problem. Lebasa de chalutz la, after he did the divorce, he did the chalitza. Amallah, he says to the woman, Zilhavla, give me my money, please. Amalei, so Abaya, she said, go speak to Abaya, the rabbi, and he'll work it all out. Abaya says to him, Mashatani ba'av the chalutz. I was just joking. I was just joking. Sue me. Yeah, perfectly. Miloi Tanya, did we not learn in a braisa, Hari Shehaya Boireach mi beis asurim, someone who's escaped from people who kidnapped him. Yeah, and he's running away. I'm not talking about someone who's broken out of jail, even though he's meant to be in jail. I'm talking about someone who was kidnapped by someone. And he breaks out. There's a river crossing. There's a guy who has a boat, and he needs to get across the river. And the normal price for the river is, I don't know, $5. And he says to him, for $1,000, is it worth it to you? You can say to the guy, take a dinar, which is a fortune, a gold coin, and take me across. He's only entitled to the other side to the regular price. What's the common denominator with all these Gemaras? The guy who lies, the Rav Yudah member said, who lies to the non-Jew and says, you ask for this piece of trade food and you'll be alright. And he ends up killed. The person who, you know, who has to make a neder to someone who's trying to steal all his money, that the food is truma when it's not really truma. The guy who's coming to decorate your house and you lie to him and say, I'll pay you double, and you don't pay him double. And the guy who wants to do it, doesn't want to do a divorce, and you promise him the money. The answer is, and this is the third principle, and this is perhaps the trickiest one, and it's poshut, it's common sense, but it's a halachic principle too. You're allowed to lie to people who are trying to cheat you. You don't have any obligation of mitvasha ketirchat when someone is trying to cheat you. It makes sense. Someone who, you know, God forbid, breaks into your house and asks where you keep all your money. What, because they ask you a question, you have a halachic obligation to give them a truthful answer, because otherwise it will be a lie? Of course you don't have any obligation to tell them the truth. The question, though, is how do you know? Because people always think they're right. People always think that other people are trying to cheat them, and therefore they'll always justify the fact that they're lying. All of these cases were cases where it was absolutely crystal clear, without a shadow of a doubt, that somebody was trying to cheat you. This guy is a non-Jew. He says he's a non-Jew. He admits it. And he says, I cheat every year. I go to the Beit HaMikdash and they give me korbanos. What's to talk about? There's no shadow of a doubt here. Somebody says he's going to, you know, decorate your house on Thursday, and he just calls you up and says, I'm going back on the contract. There's no debate. It's not like, well, it's a grey area. There's no grey area here. Someone agreed a price. They agreed a price. Finished.
Didn't he have like a death in the family or something?
He didn't say he had a death in the family. The case was not he had a death in the family. The case was very clearly, he went back on his contract. He went back. If he had a death in the family, that's a whole different business. Of course. There are cases, but the trouble is, it's hard to know that you're absolutely right. Now, your question, what about the case of the rabbi? The rabbi owes him $100. Isn't it better that truth should be, you know, honesty should be achieved and the guy in fairness should be achieved. Why justice should be done. Why can't the guy appear that he's a witness in court even though he never says anything? That was not allowed. The answer is because, you know something, the student cannot be 100% sure. Your rabbi tells you that someone owes him $100. You know for sure that your rabbi is telling the truth? How do you know for sure?
Many other things.
You trust him, but you know for sure.
Yeah, but
how
I mean,
you follow his kashrut rules and his everything.
That's different. Halachically, you are allowed, because he is a ne'eman. He's a ne'eman when it comes to kashrut. You're allowed, if he says this is kosher, to say it's kosher. Eid echod ne'eman b'isur. We learned that you're allowed to rely on someone. On the other hand, when it comes to lying to people, the only heter of lying to cheat people is when you know with 100% certainty, not someone told you, or you think, or maybe, when you know with certainty that there's nothing to talk about, and you're absolutely in the right, and they're absolutely in the wrong, and then you can say that someone's cheating. That was the common denominator in all those cases.
Known to cheat people, like all the time.
You could assume because he usually cheats people that he's cheating. Yeah, how can you assume that?
So then the Russia and the Senate area, assume they're
that when it comes to Donakav Schus, you can assume that if someone is a Russia, then they're still a Russia. And therefore, when you're looking at what they did, you don't have to assume that they did something good. That doesn't mean that you have a heter to lie to them because they're normally a Russia. The two things don't go together. You have a heter to lie to people when you know for a fact. And people, you know, people say, well, I'm allowed to lie to the government because they're all crooks anyway. It's just a horror.
But so, like, I don't know, it just feels weird for, like, with someone who gets cheated out of money and, like, they only, by chance, have one aid. Like, that's just... Like Hashem wanted to take the money away from them, is that like all that is?
Yeah, you have to just put it down to Hashkocha that I didn't have another aid. And there are reasons why there are laws and witnesses. The reason there are laws and witnesses is that you have to be able to prove it when people owe you money. You can't just make it up and bring people into court and then spin a whole web of deceit because you trust me. That's not the point whether I trust you.
It sounds like so much like, you know, two wrongs being right. Like, you never taught growing up, well, if someone lies to you, you can lie back and it'll be better. Like, it's a bit.
Okay, let me tell you something. When my daughter was very little, does it make two cheats? When my daughter was very little, I remember she came up from school and they told her that the teacher said that you're not allowed to lie. So I said to her, okay, are you ever allowed to lie? No. So I said, so what about the following case? It was a five-year-old, so I gave it in a five-year-old example. There's a good man and a bad man, and the bad man's trying to steal the good man's money, and the good man knocks on your door and says, will you help me and steal and hide the money so the bad man won't steal the money? And she said, I said, would you help the good man? He goes, of course, no problem, hide it under the table. Where? So the bad man comes and knocks. So the bad man comes and knocks on the door, and he says, "I'm a bad man. I'm trying to steal money. Okay, I'm a bad man." I said it because it was a five-year-old. I'm a bad man. I'm trying to steal money. Are you hiding money that the good man has? Because I'm trying to steal it. Yes or no? I said to him, "What would you say to the bad man? Would you say yes?" He goes, "No, I say no." No. And I said to her, "Isn't that a lie?" And of course, at 5 years old, she was immediately struck by the kind of the impossibility. My wife told me to stop because I said I was messing up her head, and she was gonna. But even a five-year-old understands that when somebody is trying to cheat you, you don't have any obligation to be true. That doesn't mean you're a cheat. You're not a cheat for saying no to the bad man. You're actually trying to get to an MS here because he's trying to steal money.
Yeah, see, like the case you gave with the house, and you need something done because your in-laws are coming in. Isn't it better in the end to just be like, okay, you know what? I'm going to be okay, Bashan, with the fact my house won't be perfect, but at least I'm not now turning myself into a cheat and telling them I'm paying them all this money even though I'm not going to.
You're right. There is a concern that you don't want to, and we'll see that exact point in a minute. There is a concern. But you know something, some cases are not so straightforward that you can just say, well, I'll put it down to experience. What happens if it's a lot of money? What happens if it's a big deal? What happens if you bought a house and the house is about to fall through? And in a case where you can say, well, you know,
Gamzul
HaTova.
On your parents, you know, like, where
some cases are Gamzul HaTova. Some cases are, no, I can't cope. I've got three small children, there's no roof on the house. But I'd like to address your question because I want to finish off with this. Look. So that's the third principle.
Why does this feel so uncomfortable for us? Why are we all like trying to fight you on this?
Because we have an inbuilt feeling that we want to be honest, and there is a mitzvah to be honest. It's just that it's difficult to... I'll tell you why I think people don't like it. Because it brings you square up to the fact that MS is a very difficult thing to define. It would be nice if MS was black and white. It would be lovely. But at the end of the day, just like MS and Sholem don't always go hand in hand, MS and Sneers don't always go hand in hand, MS and etc. So MS and people who cheat you don't go hand in hand. I'm going to bring you a source that you're going to see this in a minute. I just want to bring you two more sources and then we're going to finish. That clock, of course, is completely unhelpful. Because otherwise we'll be going until tomorrow afternoon. Look at source 23. Look at source 23. This is a very beautiful source. The Orchas Tzadikim brings the following source. B'chol elu shehetiruhu chachamim l'shanois. Whenever they gave you a heter, and he's really dealing exactly with your point. Whenever they gave you a heter to tell a lie, for whatever reason that you're allowed to tell a lie. Im yochol laso sheloi l'shaker, if you can do it in a way which is less kind of blatant. Hutov yoseh mimashu yishaker. That's better than doing it in a way that is sort of barefaced. Kagon, for example, im shoylim if they say to you, Yodea Atta Masechta Ploinis, do you know this Masechta? We saw already, it's Hamad Chalaz allowed to say, no, I don't. So rather than just saying, no, I don't, Yoshev, he should answer him, Ki Atta Sovisha Ani Yodea, what you think I know this Masechta? In other words, now you know why people never give you a straight answer. Like, you know, they give him a correct answer question with a question. If you can avoid having to mamash lie, it's better for your midas. But you know something? You're allowed to lie. And if you have to, you should. But if you can do it in a way which is not quite so barefaced, then maybe that's better. As long as that doesn't make you think that answering in a clever way makes it okay. Because that's not what makes it okay. Now you know what's happening with Yaakov Avinu. Just turn back for a second to page 22, to source 22. And I want to just finish with the source and maybe just mention two of the things and then we'll draw it to a close. The Redak on last week's parasha, Rav David Kimchi. Yesh Tmeim. There are those who ask, Eich Yaakov, how could Yaakov, Shehaya Tzadik, who was a Tzadik, V'yore Elokim, and a God-fearing man, how could he speak falsehood? Titin Emes LiYaakov. Yaakov is the Emes. The Ainz Tzmiyah says, that's not really a question, he says. Ki Yodea Haya Yaakov, Yaakov knew full well, Ki Hu Ra'uy LeBrocha. He was the one who was meant to have the Brocha. Yosef Me'achim, much more than his brother. There was nothing to talk about. How did he know? Because Rebekah had a nevuah min hashamayim. She knew. They knew what Esav was. They knew all of this. There was no question about it. The hichliv devarim b'makoymas ke'ela. If you lie in a situation like that, ainu ganayla tzadik. That's not called lying. That's not called. What was Yaakov meant to do? Yaakov was meant to let Esav take the brochas, ruin the entire future of the Jewish people, and say, "Well, what could I do? I couldn't tell a lie." Like, that's not lie. Leave me alone. I mean, what do you think? You're not a holy shmoly for not lying there. You're just basically ruining your life. When Avram and Yitzchak say, this is my sister, you're going to call them a liar for that? They're not called liars. Yaakov needed to get this brocha. If he changed the way he spoke, that's not called lying. No, the Radak is saying, cheating the cheat is not called lying. So why does he speak in a clever way? Anochi, comma, Esav Bechorecha. So this is how Rav Berkovitz explained. It's not that Rashi is telling you that if you speak in a clever way, that makes it okay to lie. Chas v'chalila, you can't speak in a crooked way. It doesn't make it okay to lie. What made it okay to lie was the fact that Esav was a cheater. That made it okay to lie. But the Orach HaTzadikim says if you have to lie, so at least do it in a way which is a little bit more sensitive to the fact that you don't really want to. That's what it means, Anochi, comma, Esav Bechorecha. Yaakov is saying it in a way which is less of a lie, but not because that makes it okay, but because that makes him feel less kind of disgusted with himself that he has to tell a lie in this particular case. You have to tell a lie. You have to hesitate to tell a lie. He just doesn't like it. And therefore Rashi, if you learn Rashi this way, Rashi's not coming to tell you that's the way to speak. Rashi's coming to tell you that if you have to speak that way because of other circumstances, then at least do it in a way which is less offensive. Which is a new way of learning Rashi, which is actually very posh. In fact, he's not the only one that learns that way. Who else learns that way? I saw someone who Meforish, I think it was Rav Zalman Sorotkin. I think it was the Osnayim Torah who learns explicitly that this is what Rashi means in this particular scenario. Which is not how they teach it in Cheder. And that's not how, in fact, a very good friend of mine wrote a wrote a piece for a famous Jewish religious newspaper about how could Yaakov say Anochib Esa B'charecha. And he quotes different approaches. He quoted this approach in his essay, and they censored it. They wouldn't print it.
No.
The paper took it out, and the reason they took it out is they say because we feel this is too confusing for people. We don't want people to hear this mahalach, so it was kind of censored out.
Mm-hmm.
They'd rather people learn that Yaakov said like this, and that made it okay to speak that way, which is actually really not so pashut that it's okay to speak this way. So the truth is that you can't actually censor the Mikros Gedolos because it's all still there, even though you can censor the newspaper. But the three principles, just to sum up, are, number one, it's not what you say that matters, it's what they hear that matters. If you say something that's technically true and it's actually a lie, it's actually misleading, then that's called shek. If you say something technically false and it's actually not misleading, then that's called MS, number one. Number two, the principle number two, is that sholem, and sometimes sneers, and sometimes other things override the prohibition on sheker, and they're part of the whole world of sheker. To cause machloik is itself sheker. Okay? And the third principle is people sometimes are trying to cheat you. And it may not only be financial, by the way. Like, who were you on a shidduch with last night? People who are prying into your private life. People who are trying to get information from you they have no right to get. You have an obligation to be truthful with them. You have an obligation to tell them. I mean, they're trying to cheat you out of stuff that they're not entitled to. I'll finish I want to draw your attention to a medrash in number 24. I'm not going to learn it inside because I don't want to take away from the next class, but the medrash gives an interesting example of somebody who lived in a place where no one ever lied and no one ever died. Okay, a rabbi that lived in such a place.
Yeah.
And it's a midrashic understanding. And he goes, because he never wants to ever, ever, ever tell a lie. He can't let a lie pass his lips. So he goes to live in a place where no one ever lies and no one ever dies. His wife one day is sitting in the bath, washing her hair, says the Medrash. So the neighbor comes to the door, knocks on the door, says, where is your wife right now? And he's about to say she's sitting in the bath washing her hair, because that's the truth, and this is a place where no one ever lies. And he just realizes he can't say that, because it's not nice. It's not derecher, it's not sneers. He doesn't want his neighbor to think of his wife in the bath. So he says she's not here right now. And his two sons drop dead, says the Medrash. The people from the town come to the place, and they say to him, how can people die here? This is a place where no one died. Have you been lying? So the lady says to them, what can I do? And they ask him about my wife. I don't want to say my wife's in the bath. So the people in the town say to him, you don't belong here. Go, leave. Because this is a place where no one ever lies. No one ever dies. You start lying, people start dying. We don't want your side. What a weird medrash. The Maharal says, is there a place where no one ever lies and no one ever dies? Of course there is. Where? Olam Haba. He says, what this medrash is teaching is like this. You want to live in a world where no one ever tells a lie? Great. You'll get there soon enough, after 120 years. There's an Olam Ha'emes. No one ever lies there, because there's no conflicts between sholem and sneers and people cheating you. That's not what happens there. And no one ever dies there, because they're all dead already. Yeah? It's a place where no one ever lies, no one ever dies. You want to be like that in this world? Forget about it. MS in this world is very complicated. There are people out to cheat you. There are people who are, you know, people who are not sensitive to you. There are places where they say, doesn't my wife look lovely? There are places where you're going to have to lie. If you don't like it, tough. You have to live in Olam Haba if you want to have an absolute level of MS. Which, of course, is partly where Beis Shammai is coming from.
Right.
Beis Shammai, the name indicates itself that they're slightly living in Shammayim,
mm-hmm.
and therefore they have a slightly different attitude. But we don't pass like Beis Shammai, passing like Beis Hillel, and therefore we have to come to terms with this rather kind of grey, but nevertheless human understanding of MS.
Wow.
I can't.